Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. We are delighted to be... It's another lockdown episode. I keep saying this every single time.
Another one.
We are delighted to be joined by James Acaster. Hello, James.
Thank you, Ramesh.
Here he is.
Hello, Rupert. Rupert, are you involved proper in the podcast?
Yeah, I'm a pointless sidekick.
Brilliant. I didn't know that.
You've listened to it loads, then.
Yep, big fan.
Lower your expectations. And this is sort of the pinnacle of your career, getting on this.
Of course it is.
There you go.
But my career has been one long list of pinnacles, to be honest. So
there you go.
Have you been doing the podcast round since you've been on lockdown?
Not as such. Every now and again. I mean, I've got my own podcast, so it's mainly just like me recording my own ones, and I don't think I've done many other people's podcasts besides this, but you know, my internet can sometimes be quite temperamental, so I'm trying to do as little as possible. Basically, it started going haywire lately. I've just kept all the existing ones in the diary, of which this is one, but I'm probably going to disappear halfway through.
Okay, fine. It's good to know. I did Brett Goldstein's podcast. Have you done that?
I did. I that was actually one of the ones I did in lockdown as well, yeah.
Yeah, so I did that, and I didn't realise, I guess early days in lockdown, I was feeling a bit... like I wanted stuff to do, so I did a few podcasts, and then every single time a podcast was announced, Brett would get increasingly angry with me for undermining my own booking on his podcast.
Yeah, he's a very angry boy. He acts like he's not, he likes everyone to believe that he's a chill guy, but he's very possessive and very furious, and he doesn't really see that if he's got Ramesh on his podcast, then probably people are still going to listen to it. People aren't going to go, oh, I've had enough of Ramesh Ranganathan. They're all deliberately... There's a reason why people book you on their podcasts, Rob.
Yeah, thank you, James. Well, thank you so much for joining us on ours, mate. I appreciate it.
Well, to be honest, I don't really listen to any podcasts, but I do love music. So getting to be on a podcast about music is the dream.
Now, I've got to be honest with you, as a guest, I find you quite intimidating. I'll tell you why, because I came on your podcast recently.
Yes.
And, like, I am guilty of, as the podcast sort of implies, of being into primarily one genre of music, right? Whereas you are, you listen to everything, don't you, pretty much? That's fair to say, isn't it? You're pretty eclectic, right?
That is fair to say, although what I've discovered through, like, talking about music a lot more in the last year or so is that while it looks like I like loads of genres of music, I kind of only like one genre of music. So I like stuff that's a bit weird. If all genres aren't linear, there's actually a crisscross of different things, and it's like everything that is a bit wacky across all the genres. So people who like one genre of music, they know way more about that genre than I do. They like loads more different hip-hop artists or rock artists than I do within that thing. And their taste is probably broader in that respect. Whereas I just like people to be experimental across the board, whatever the genre is.
I do get that from you. But like, do you ever... because there's an argument that everything you then listen to is like really fucking challenging, right? Like, you know, like sometimes when you put on a record that sort of does what it says on the tin, there's something about that that's satisfying, isn't there? Where you go, I just fancy listening to this artist that does this thing that I know that he or she's going to do. Whereas you're listening to stuff where they could go anywhere, right? I mean, is that what attracts you to it, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. But also, like, I guess I do like some stuff that is more straightforward, but then it has to be almost like either the best version of that, so someone doing, you know, old school hip hop by the book, or indie or grunge by the book, but they're just doing it better than anyone else, the musicians sound more distinct. Or I think, because like mainly what I was brought up on was indie rock, I kind of will still lean towards just any good version of that. That's probably the only one that I let slide, of just like, yeah, oh, it's a pretty average, just down the line indie band, but it makes me feel safe and secure because it reminds me of growing up, so I'll still listen to it.
And what would you say your relationship with hip-hop is? I mean, I know that you've got a very particular taste in hip-hop, but does that mean that the other stuff, the more mainstream stuff, you kind of stay just completely well away from?
I definitely don't stay well away from it. I try and, like, be as open to it as possible and try and... Because I think of all the genres in music right now, hip-hop and, like, to some extent as well, R&B, are, like, constantly evolving and are leading the charge in terms of, like, moving music forward. It's definitely mainly happening in hip-hop and R&B. And so I think being ignorant to what's happening in the mainstream there is a bit of a misstep, because I want to keep on top of what's going on, and I might find stuff that I really like. Also, there's a lot of experimental music in the mainstream of hip-hop too, so I think maybe I struggle sometimes with like some of the bigger trap stuff, and it gets a little bit saturated and the artists don't always sound like they're trying, but then sometimes you get a real gem out of that, so you know.
It is annoying. I don't mind a song being shit, but if they've not even bothered to put the effort in, you know, if they've been casual about it, fucking irritating, isn't it?
Yeah, and they're just like putting out an album or a mixtape every single year, sometimes more than one, and you're like, couldn't you have just like waited 2 years and put out 10 really amazing songs and given us something that we could listen to over and over again and be like, oh my god, this is so good, and tell all our mates? Why did you have to do another one 2 months later that is absolute hot garbage, and then we've got to all talk about it like it's genius still because you're telling us you're a genius?
Here's a little bit that you like to pull. How did you get into hip-hop?
What's your route into hip-hop? How did you get into it in the first place?
The earliest memory I have of getting into hip-hop was going round. I don't think Rock Circus is a thing anymore, but do you remember Rock Circus, the Madame Tussauds, but for music?
No,
I don't remember that. I've got no recollection of it.
So that was in London. I don't know how long it existed for, but we visited London as a family and we went to Madame Tussauds and then immediately went to Rock Circus afterwards. I had like a full waxwork day. And Rock Circus, I was like in heaven. I loved music anyway. And
who did they have?
They had Elton John, I remember. There's a big Elton John waxwork. But they made much bigger deal of it. Like when you walk around Madame Tussauds, you do feel like you're in a museum. Rock Circus felt like you were inside someone's imagination and it was amazing. And like Elton John was like, you know, floating and playing the piano and looked colourful. And there was like loads of like bright lights and sparkly things orbiting him. They showed the Sid Vicious My Way video on this massive screen, and like that shit me up. I was like a kid, and like at the end of it he shoots everyone. I was like, what is this? Like, it's just horrible, but like still like going away and thinking, I want to know who the Sex Pistols are. And they had, now I've forgotten the band name, which is awful, but they were, one of the videos they were playing was Come Baby Come. Do you remember that song?
Yeah, K7.
I think K7. I think it's K7.
Yeah.
And at that age, I only liked music. I was obsessed with music, but I mainly liked it being funny. I liked there to be something about it that was comical or slightly funny. And I just found the song, there was something amusing about it, how they kept on like doing all these little catchphrases all the way through, saying swing bat, 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 swing bat, 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 swing, or whatever, that kind of stuff. All those things really made me laugh. And I loved it. And I went to the library. This is how most people get into hip hop, I think. I went to the library when I got home to Kettering, and I got out this best hip hop songs of all time cassette tape, a double album. Went home and listened to it non-stop. Loved it so much that copied it onto blank cassette, onto a blank tape before returning to the library. Pretty badass. And would constantly listen to that. So that was my way into it. So I was in primary school still.
Can you remember the track listing on that?
Yeah. Magic Number was on there by De La Soul. PM Dawn was on there, which I've never listened to before or since. Salt and Pepper were on there. But it was that kind of stuff which was like, I think out of all of it, De La Soul is the only stuff I still would listen to and like. And that's the magic number.
What does it all mean? Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music, raising three parts. Casually see, but don't do like a soul. Cause seeing and doing are actions for monkeys. Doing hip hop, hustle, no rock and roll. Unless your name's Brewster, cause Brewster's a punk. Parents
let go. It's weird, isn't it? It's because like De La Soul was sort of light and acceptable to the mainstream, but that's because that's what they happened to be into and wanted to make.
Yeah.
Whereas all of the other stuff that you've named, it's kind of stuff where they've made it light and acceptable because that's what they thought would be good to do. Do you know what I mean? Whereas De La Soul just sort of felt organically they fell into that, didn't they?
Yeah, and I loved them because I was, I mean, now I have a completely different opinion. But like at the time, as a you know middle-class white kid in Northamptonshire, I was like, oh, these guys are great. They're like singing about, that they like eating Twizzlers. And they're like eating candy and yogurt, and they're like really like nice boys, and they're all about like being hippies and stuff like that. Even at that age, I was like, what do they have to sing about guns and sexist? It's very not. They shouldn't be bragging about that kind of stuff. So I always didn't believe the rappers who were, you know, rapping about their actual lives. To be fair to them. I was like, no, because I was, you know, in primary school and thought that my life experience was the only one that existed. So I thought De La Soul were the only ones telling the truth.
I do think there's a certain element of truth in that. Like in terms of like, you'd hear rappers talking about how they're the absolute hardest in their area or whatever, and nobody was fucking with them and stuff like that. And you think it's a weird overlap that the person who both happened to be sort of the hardest from that area also was the most musically talented. It felt like those were two things that wouldn't necessarily coincide. But I do know what you mean. You sort of go, well, I don't know if I like people talking like that. It's such a sheltered attitude to approach it from, isn't it? But you can't help it.
Essentially a little Tory just walking around my house being like oh no, well, you shouldn't be glorified, I shouldn't be glamorizing that sort of behavior. Why do you have to sing about that? Well, because it's our lives and the system has put us into this situation. No, stop, sing about yogurt, please. I like yogurt and I eat it. Why can't you just sing about yogurt?
Do you think that there's a slight you know, if you're from, let's say, Crawley, for example, and you're listening to that music, do you think there's a certain discomfort about the sort of voyeurism of that, of like kind of deriving entertainment from that, from talking about those things that are nowhere near your kind of lifestyle?
I think maybe. I think for the artists, it definitely sometimes feels like that. I think one of my favourite hip-hop albums, Atrocity Exhibition by Danny Brown, is kind of him kind of, that whole album is about that, and him being like, I kind of don't like the fact that I'm this freak show to you all now, and you get to just stand back and look at all this weird stuff he's done in his weird life.
With a back, go dangerous, on that cat. Go tracks, man, hit it from the back. DJ stop and slap me back. Bruce every day, we run that train. Put that thing in her caboose. Only way you hang is where I knows. Beware, I say, ain't no tropes. Y'all niggas lame, y'all ain't like us. Hang up with a double off, ain't your dust. For that money, ain't that we trust. All for people for greed and lust. When you put the trust, when guns gon' bust.
Even though, to be a good artist, especially in hip-hop, it's good to talk about your own experience and be able to articulate that, and then you end up in this like weird situation, and there's a lot of responsibility on the listener, but how do we accept that responsibility? How old are we when we realize we've even got that responsibility? Then what do we do with it? I think there's very few occasions where when they say that people listen to hip-hop and what they rap about and they start to emulate it, I think a lot of the time they're emulating it because their life is already kind of in that, they're already stuck in similar kind of traps in like the way that, you know, society works and is stacked against them and stuff. Like, you're not going to suddenly, like, I, as the kid that I was, wasn't going to start going out, starting fights with people or like anything like, you know, it was, that's not how it works. It's because your back's against the wall. You're kind of in that situation anyway. And then you learn that, okay, I've kind of got a front in order to survive in this environment. And these rappers are singing about that. And so maybe I can take some tips from that. I don't think people are suddenly going, right, okay, I'm going to start doing that for no reason.
Well, it is, but the thing is, it is possible for you in Kettering to relate to the disenfranchisement of a rapper without necessarily connecting with the exact circumstances of that, right? So you might just, it might be that you're, I don't know, that you're tuned into that, the sentiment rather than the actual kind of details of it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's with all music, really. You can listen to, you know, some really, someone who's, you know, extremely depressed and you're actually quite a happy-go-lucky person, but you can still relate to it because there's times in your life where you've just felt quite sad and you just go, yeah, I remember when I felt sad that way.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel bad when you boil it down to what you're angry about. You're just like, yeah, no, I'm angry as well because mum and dad won't buy me that Amiga. You know, I understand what it's like to feel really pissed off about things. It just doesn't seem like anything's going your way. I get that. Exactly.
That's what it turns into, and then the artists learn who their fans are and hate you. I mean, that's most of the time what it is, right?
Rack your brains, give it some thought. What was the first hip-hop album you bought?
So what were the early albums, like the early actual albums that you committed to and bought and stuff? What was the stuff that you initially got into?
Yeah, well, I was like, I didn't start buying albums until I was a teenager. I was buying singles for ages and compilations. And then a really awful patch, I'd say, where the only hip-hop I listened to was, or the only, it wasn't hip-hop, the only rapping I listened to was when it was involved in the awful genre known as nu metal. And when I was like, 13 to 15, I guess. And it was like, that was all the rap I heard, of which I'd say Rage Against the Machine is the only one that has decent rapping in, and then everything else is pretty much horrific rap.
So who were the new metal bands? Obviously, there's Limp Bizkit, there's Rage Against the Machine, not Rage Against the Machine, rap metal.
Korn was seen to start that genre. They didn't really rap, although there was, if you want to hear the worst rap battle you have ever heard in your life,
go
on the Follow the Leader album by Korn, and there's a track where Jonathan Davis and Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit are having a rap battle, and it is the most pathetic thing you've ever heard. It is toe-curlingly embarrassing. The things that they're saying to each other is just so, like, the disses that they're using, also like the slurs that they're using, that suddenly, like, I don't know if I'd heard them on normal rap tracks, like actual rap songs, and just like block them out, and then you hear two kind of white boys saying it to each other, and then suddenly they sound absolutely horrific, and you see them for the awful slurs that they actually are.
Who the fuck you think you're talking to? I'm known for eating little whiny chumps like you.
Whatever.
All up in my face with that.
Are you ready?
But halitosis is all you're rocking steady. Your little fairy smelling on your flowers. Nappy hairy chest. Look, it's Austin Powers.
Yeah,
I hear
baby.
You tooting on them bagpipes, Clyde. But you said it best. There's no place to hide.
It's a very uncomfortable song. I can't even remember what the song's called. Joel Dommett would be able to tell you at the drop of a hat.
Oh,
but like,
100%.
it's absolutely horrific.
Can you remember any of the slurs?
Yeah, I'm not saying them. just go straight to the top shelf. The worst slurs you can say about each individual group, and they basically just go through them. So it's not good.
Rupert, are you trying to get James cancelled or some shit? You're not going to get him like that, mate.
I was trying.
Well, born yesterday. Papa Roach were a new metal band, and I saw them at Ozfest. And I don't want to be like I'm shitting on metal music, because I do love loads of metal and stuff like that. But like, new metal in general was pretty horrific, and Papa Roach especially were like awful band. And I saw them at Ozfest when I still kind of liked them. I liked their debut album, and the singer Kobe Dick, that's his name that he chooses to be called by.
There you go.
His rapping live, it's the first time that as an audience member I've gone, are you shitting me? Like, you can't actually, this can't be what you're bringing to the table here. There's thousands of us. You're in a professional band. This is your job. And the breaths you are taking, like after every other word in between. He was missing entire words. Half of a sentence was missing because he was trying to catch his breath. Like, you're meant to be rapping in a back. Like, you can't. And also, as a white guy rapping, you have got to be on it, mate. You can't be just going, oh, sorry, and then continue to pass yourself off as a rapper. That is beyond rude. Like, so it was, I remember being very angry watching Papa Roach live and seeing him like wheezing in between sentences and missing half of it out. So I still hadn't bought a rap album at that point, to answer your question. So the first time I started buying rap albums was my second kind of wave of getting into hip hop, was when I was in my late teens and I started getting into the Anticon label. I'm pausing now because it's hard to say what the first one I bought was, because the first band I got into on that was Y, but they were also very indie and mixed hip hop with indie stuff, and I wouldn't say they did a hip hop album. But Cloud Dead, I'd say, was hip hop, and I probably right. probably that, like that indie rap kind of way into it, was like my second wave of getting into it. So yeah, I probably bought 10 by Cloud Dead.
Popsicle.
No.
The label stapled the speaker
at the back of a sheep's
throat. Tongue depressor with the whip,
with the width of a spatula,
suppresses all
sula.
Oh,
ba ba blah,
ba ba blah,
ba ba blah,
ba ba blah.
End
quote.
And how did you get to that? I mean, like, if you're listening, was that just off listening to more mainstream stuff and then you just came across them, or was it that the sort of thing you were looking for?
Well, I'd really gone off of like mainstream hip hop for quite a few years, because when I got into like punk and metal when I was 13, that was all I listened to for like until I was about 16, 17 in school. So I kind of just didn't engage with anything else. And then I just got sick of it and was like, why am I just listening to this all the time? And I wanted to get into as much stuff as I possibly could. I met my friend Graham, who is still my mate now, and we formed a band together, and we're like, right, we're going to listen to jazz, and we're going to listen to dance music, and we're going to listen to hip hop. And it was kind of my way in back into hip hop, was like, because it's, you know, why we're guitar based still, and we're a bit more like kind of Beck and stuff like that in terms of how much like hip hop influence there was in there. So it was a way back into it. And then on that record label, finding artists like Sage Francis and stuff like that, who were a bit more pure hip hop orientated, and discovering it that way. But I'd say still for a few years, the main stuff I listened to hip hop wise was all on that record label.
Yeah. And that is, like you said, it's on the edges, not on the edges in terms of quality or anything, it's great stuff, but there are loads of hip-hop fans that wouldn't have ever dabbled with that kind of stuff at all, right? I mean, you're sitting on the fringes of the genre in that way, aren't you?
Absolutely. And also, like, even within that label, there was arguments of like what is hip-hop and what isn't, and like, yeah, people like Sage Francis pointing at Y and being like, get out of here, you do not belong here, it's not hip-hop, you're not a rapper. And so, like, even amongst that, there was like disagreements. I'd say the most kind of, oh, still at that time I was buying like classics as well. So I was like, outside of that label, I was buying like Wu-Tang and stuff like that, and being like, right, I'm going to educate myself with these classic albums, hip hop albums, and getting into those. But that was more, while I do like those albums now, at the time, it was more that I was trying to educate myself and having to kind of force myself to like it a bit more. It wasn't just an organic thing of like, this is what my ears are tuned to and I enjoy. I was like, it's important that I listen to 36 Chambers and Straight Outta Compton and stuff like that, because these are massive albums and I've written off this genre for too long now.
It's weird, isn't it, where you sometimes have these records that you feel like you should listen to. And like, I had a friend of mine recently get in touch with me because I kept on going on about Run the Jewels, right? And I love the Jewels so much. And then he messaged me recently going, man, I'm really sorry, but I can't get into Run the Jewels. And I keep trying to listen to them because I know that I'm supposed to like them because I do like hip hop. But he goes, but I just can't. Yeah. And I just said to him, you don't have to like them, man. It's like, it doesn't, because like, he knew that people, he knew that his opinion, that their opinion he trusted about hip hop, he felt like there was something wrong with him because he wasn't enjoying their music. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, there is.
Yeah.
It's mad.
I mean, that's a good
point. He likes hip hip-hop and doesn't like Run the Jewels. What the fuck is he listening to?
Don't get me wrong, the guy's a cunt. But the point I'm trying to make is there's no reason for him to force himself to listen to it.
Absolutely. Especially, like, I think with hip-hop, it's harder to, like, you know, when the age I was, 17 or whatever, and actively trying to get into 36 Chambers, when it's like, I mean, that is such a different world to what my life was. And like, which I think is in a way very good to kind of like try and get into it for that reason, which isn't what I was doing. I wasn't trying to educate myself with like, you know, this is a completely different world to mine, and let's like listen to that and learn about it. I just wanted to listen to classic albums that were so. But musically, hip hop had moved on so much from it in a way that it was weird going back and listening to 36 Chambers, which I still like now, but like trying to get into like, oh, okay, the instrumentals kind of sound like these are, it's very different to what I was used to hearing with hip hop, and a bit more primitive as well. Like you could hear them, like they were making it sound quite dirty and not very clean, and that took me a while to adjust to, and that was a real hard transition to go like, okay, this is where it started from. Well, not even start from Wu-Tang, but like, you know, this is like where a lot of the groups nowadays who they're influenced by this album, and trying to kind of like access it that way.
Well, it's a weird thing, isn't it, because a lot of those Wu-Tang records and stuff like that, they kind of sound unfinished to if you're not tuned into that kind of thing. You just sort of think, surely they should have, I mean, there's a bit where they're talking over each other, right? I mean, shouldn't they have sorted that out before they put this out and stuff like that? Do you know what I mean? So yeah. It is a weird thing where you just sort of go, well, that's part of the charm of it, I guess. But yeah, I totally get where you're coming from.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, man, what's your favorite hip-hop album?
Is there a hip-hop album that stands out for you as kind of your favourite or the one that you keep going back to?
Yeah, there's a few that are like, right, I mean, it changes a lot because there's, I think every year something gets released where I think, oh, this is my new favourite hip-hop album or something, because like, there's always people pushing it. The ones that I return to the most and that I feel the biggest connection to, I mean, pretty recent as well, but like is Mad Villainy, To Pimp a Butterfly, and Everything's Fine by Gene Gray and Quelle Chris.
Hacksaws crest, black rock mon and off. Smack paws with the catch from the Donna party. That's a body party. Sierra, Nevada. I'm Hunter's lawyer, scared of nada. Paranoia, I'm on you, marionette. Father for me, tell your father for me. I said, what up, but don't call me. What's the story, glory, never? Not even when I'm salt and pepper. You'll go on and ignore me forever. Cardi, still Cardi, the mortal.
Those are the kind of three that I can't really see a point where I don't like those albums. And I know they're quite, like, well, maybe Everything's Fine isn't as go-to, but, like, the first two are, like, pretty standard. A lot of people would say them. So therefore, Everything's Fine feels a bit more personal to me.
Haven't you appeared on a Quelle Chris album? Is that, haven't I made that up, have I?
That is incorrect. I've appeared on two of them.
Woohoo! How did that come about?
How did this happen?
I tweeted about how much I loved Everything's Fine. And then I think he quote tweeted it saying, great, we should work together. And I was like, well, that's a joke, because there's no way he knows who I am. So, ha ha ha. But then I replied still, being like, yeah, just tell me when. And he was like, cool, well, I'll be in touch, we'll sort something out. I was like, well, that, okay. And then like he DM'd me later on, being like, okay, yeah, I've got a bit that I'd like you to do for this next record. And I was like, sorry, how have you heard of me? And he said, oh, Joe and everything's fine. We just started watching Mott the Week.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we're watching Mott the Week. So he probably knows who you are. But like, he's like, yeah, we just watch Mott the Week a lot. And so I've seen you on that. And I was like, oh, okay. So like, I didn't expect that. So yeah, doing that bit for him. So that was on his album Guns. And he sent me through this monologue. And I had to record it. I did a podcast recording where we were in a studio. So I thought, right, I'll just do it after that and stay in. And I felt so stupid because like some of the people were sticking around to hear me do this monologue. I was like, I feel so... And he sent like example of him doing it. I was like, he sounds amazing on it. Like his voice is really smooth and deep. And he makes it sound like there's just a real authority to it. And I sound like an absolute nerd. And then Nish was there, Nish Kumar. And Nish kind of went, James... He has asked you to do this for a specific reason, and I don't think it's because you sound really cool and smooth. Like, he's asked you to do this because you're a comedian. That's your job, is you're a comic, and you sound like a bit of a nerd. And he's got that in mind, and that's why he's asked you to do it. So, like, and I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. And then I got to record it. But, like, it's still the bit for me. I love that album. I love Guns. And I forget that I'm on it because I'm just a fan of him and I was a fan of him first. And so every time I'm listening to it, I'm just having the best time. I was like, oh, fuck, this guy's a genius. Oh, he's so good. And then suddenly I hear my voice. I'm like, who the fuck is that? What the? And I just had to skip it.
Who are you?
What are you?
And what do you want from me?
Is it my money?
My joy,
my loyalty,
my compliance.
Should I laugh?
Who are you?
Should I cry?
And what do you want?
Should I fear? Why should I care at all? I don't even know.
I'm like, you're ruining this album for everybody. I feel like I need to apologize. But I will happily ruin as many of his albums as you want me to. It's such an honor being able to do it. I've never really talked to him about what I've met him once because he came to a show I did in New York. And I never really, but I think that was before I recorded this thing for him or I'd even seen it. So I didn't know what it was. I've never really asked him, like,
why?
What's the thinking behind it? Because I guess we were both weirdly, you know, kind of fans of each other. I'm definitely a fan of his. I'm not going to call him a fan of mine, but like, because I don't put words in his mouth. But we were both aware of each other and seen each other's stuff. And so, like, then both doing the monologue over the top of one another, talking to each other in that way and saying the same thing. I don't know if that was a part of it. I really don't know.
Mm.
I don't understand the thing that I did. It could be the most offensive thing I've ever done in my life. I'm not aware of it.
It's a weird thing. I mean, it's kind of lucky that you had Nish there to kind of shake you up and give you sort of that pep talk of his. Because, like, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because... obviously, like you said, you're a fan of his and he's from such a different world to where you're from. And so your instinct is to go, I'm going to try and second guess what it is I'm supposed to do on this hip hop thing. Do you know what I mean? Like and then you just sort of, and then you run the risk of trying to sound hip hop or something or more hip hop than you normally sound in some way. I mean, that's...
Yeah,
that's
I could have like sent him in and sounded like Kobe Dick, you know? There you go. I've done that. You'd be like, why are you wheezing? What is this? Why are you trying to be? I've asked you. I could have asked, I know a lot of rappers that I could have asked to do this. Why would I ask you? Think it through. I saw you on Mock the Week, mate.
How nervous were you after you sent it off to him?
Really nervous, but also like, it was this thing of like having to just trust him and be like, okay, hopefully, like he'll just, because I was really excited about it. I was like, I really want it to be on the record. And if it's not on there, hasn't made the cut, I'll be really disappointed. But then when it was one of the singles in the end, so like it came out before the album and Ed Gamble texted me going, the song's out and you are on it.
Did you say you appeared on a second track as well then of his?
Yeah, on the new album, on the intro track, it's this thing where it's a sequel, this album, to an album that he did in 2015 called Innocent Country. And this is Innocent Country 2. And so he wanted the start to be like a previously on Innocent Country and then like a catch up. And so he sent through the whole kind of like fake catch up. And I just did all of it And then he was like, I'll chop it up and I'll use some of what you did, some of what other people did and all this kind of stuff. So I didn't know what bits of mine were going to be used on this new album or if any of it would. And I was very excited about the record again because it's like favorite. So I put it on and I'm the first thing on it. I was like, I'm beyond happy with that. Like, I can't tell you, especially during lockdown, for that to come out and for me to put it on. And the first thing is me going, previously on Too Dirt for TV's Innocent Country. And I was like, this is the best day of my life. I can't express enough happier with that than I am with anything I've done in my own career, anything that I've created. Like, it made me feel so much prouder and way, way happier that I did that.
Has he reached out since and said this is going to continue throughout his sort of career of albums? He's just going to be a runner.
Well, I've reached out to him about something that I'm doing, and he said that he would be involved, but it's very, very, very early stages at the minute. So we will see when I get round to the, when it gets to the stage that I would need him and if he's then still able to do it. But, you know, Jean Grey, who is, you know, obviously he did Everything's Fine with, did mine and Ed's Off Menu podcast and stuff. So, like, hopefully we'll continue to every now and again pop up in each other's.
I guess it's going to get to a point where if he puts out an album that doesn't have you on, it's going to be crushing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be gutted. Actually, no, to be fair, I'm absolutely delighted that I've even got two of them. It's like I feel the same way as I do with panel shows, where like I'll do one and you kind of do one episode, and really you just want to get booked once more because then that shows everyone that you weren't shit on it, and that's all you want.
That's so true. That's so true. So To Pimp a Butterfly, why that over the Kendrick's other ones?
I just think it's one of those albums that I listen. I mean, not that I listen to many albums and think I could do this, because I couldn't, but I can't conceive of how he did the album. So like there's certain albums that you listen to and go, I don't even know how you've made, I wouldn't know where to start with anything like this. It just seems like otherworldly and magical how you've made something this dense, and yet, even though, like, I wouldn't call it accessible because it wasn't easy for me to get into it, I bought it the year it came out because everyone was talking about it, and I found it very hard to get into because of how dense it was. And then the following year, where I bought Untitled and Mastered, and loved that, and then was able to get into To Pimp a Butterfly via, because Untitled and Mastered was kind of like, this is a simpler way of like explaining what I was doing on that album. I was like, okay, I get it now. And now I'm going to go back and listen to that. And then it was like, oh, like there's not a second on this where you're not hitting us on so many different levels. I mean, what I like about him is that he's just business-wise and career-wise, like he's just so smart in what he puts out every time. Like, you know, from his debut album of being like, okay, this is a good way to introduce myself to people. And now I'm going to up it and do like a more ambitious version of that. And then To Pimp a Butterfly coming out and being like, none of you would have seen this coming. This is like full on, I'm trying to do one of the best albums of all time. And then it's quite smart to then release some B-sides afterwards because it's low pressure. But after this massive thing, that how do you follow that up? And then to go, I'm just going to do like a trap album and prove that I'm better at this genre than anyone who's doing it at the minute, and that I could have done this if I wanted to. And I'm just going to do that in my sleep. So while I like all of his albums for different reasons, that one is just like, well, you're on Mount Rushmore now. That's you. You've very few artists in any genre produce anything like that.
Do you think you're drawn to musicians that have the same approach that, because of what you're describing of like putting your heart and soul into a thing and being very careful about what you put out and thinking about very carefully. I mean, that is how you've approached your own career in terms of the shows you put out and stuff like that. Do you think there's a commonality to that in terms of your sort of attracted to artists who have the same kind of attitude to their output that you do?
Well, in a sense, but like kind of the other way around in a way, in that, like, you know, I like that kind of stuff. And so when I'm doing a show, I'm just very honest with myself if I'm, you know, making the kind of thing that I wouldn't want to watch myself, and that I kind of go, well, this person. Also, I just find it more enjoyable to throw myself into it. Anytime I try and avoid the actual work and not do something very well or to the best of my ability, then it's so much more of a ball ache. because I've still got to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, now I've got to go out there and say all this stuff that I know is rubbish and stand in front of these people and kind of avoiding doing work on it every day. And that's in my head that I know that I should be doing it, but I'm not doing it. It's actually much more fun to just sit down and go, right, let's try and, you know, and make this happen. Because that's the kind of stuff that I enjoy, and I feel quite shortchanged sometimes when I listen to something that's, you know, an album that's not done that, and they've just gone, oh, you'll buy it anyway, you idiots, there you go. I'm like, I'm not an idiot. I wanted to listen to a good thing. So like, yeah, I just like, I think I got into stuff because it was, you know, I got into music because it was exciting, and so I just want to continue to be excited by it. And I definitely don't want people spending money on seeing me live and then leave and know that I didn't do all that I could to make them feel the same way.
I find that I did try my very hardest, but they still walk away bitterly disappointed. I mean, that's the line that I'm walking.
The good news.
Oh, that's always going to happen. There's always going to be people who are disappointed. But that's what you want. Also, I mean, that's part of it, is that I want to be able to feel like I don't care when that happens. So as much as possible, if people turn around and tell me that was a bag of shit, I want to be like, oh, well, it's subjective, so fine, but I know it's not. So, I know this is not objectively a bag of shit, what I just did for you. I know that it's a matter of taste. Like, if someone turns around to Kendrick and goes, To Pimp a Butterfly is absolute bollocks, it's one of the worst albums I've ever heard, I don't think he's going to go home and go, maybe I made a shit album. Like, I think it's just going to be like, all right, mate, you clearly don't like that. That's fine. You know, that's the dream. Because every gig I've ever done, someone's gone away thinking I'm the worst comedian they've ever seen. No doubt that's happened at every single show. But I want to at least be like, have know in my heart that it wasn't that bad, you know.
Is that, well, because I was actually, this is what I was going to say to you at the beginning of the thing, because you're off all social media now, aren't you?
Yeah.
But I did a show in Edinburgh. And I had like a gig that, you know, it was a rare one in terms of I came away from it thinking, oh, that went well. I enjoyed that and blah, blah, blah. I was fairly happy about it. And then I got a tweet from somebody who said, I left at the interval because that was easily one of the worst things I've ever seen. And I couldn't bring myself to watch the second half. Right? So, so like, but it was so funny to me. Well, I say it was so funny. It was actually horrible. Was that one message completely undermined everything good about that evening. Do you know what I mean? And so actually I sort of think, is that the kind of thing that you're taking yourself away from? And have you totally, I mean, you've enjoyed being off social media, I take it, right?
I love being off it, but that's not what I was taking myself away from. I had a break from it once before. I can't remember what it was, but it was like I didn't delete my everything. I intended to go back on it, but it was like when Edinburgh, I just was like, because Edinburgh's the worst for it, because your ego's a lot more brittle and fragile, and you really want the show to be good and to get in good reviews and all this kind of stuff and to be selling tickets. So then when someone does tweet in Edinburgh that was shit, it can upset you when it doesn't normally. But I took a break from it when Edinburgh, and then because I then chose to go back on it, I'd chosen to not care what people were saying to me. So from that moment onwards, I didn't care. Whenever anyone tweeted that was rubbish, I thought it was really funny. And I had a gig on my last tour last year in Liverpool where someone left in the interval, or before the interval, 20 minutes in, and tweeted me that they're on their way home right now and you're probably still on stage saying that all Leave voters are racist, you piece of shit, and all this kind of like really, really not liking me. And I saw that in the interval. And then went back on and just really, I thought it was the funniest thing, and just told them all, like, this guy. And like they all found him on Twitter, and they didn't bully him. They actually had a laugh with him. And he was actually quite nice by the end and kind of admitted that he probably was a bit hasty. But like I was just found it funny. And like I'm taking myself away from just what social media does to me. So like I don't want to be checking it all the time. I don't want to be on it all day checking it. It feels so empty. And like I feel like, I mean, I don't believe in a soul, but like I feel like, you know, whatever people want to call a soul, I feel that getting eroded every time I'm on there. And just let, you know, there's cultures that believe if you have your photograph taken, you lose a part of your soul. I feel like that with Twitter. It's like every time I scroll down and look at my app mentions or whatever, I just feel that part of me just going away and going away. And I didn't like the fact that I'd do a gig that I really enjoyed, and then I had to go on there for reassurance it was good or whatever, because I, because it didn't make me feel good when people said it was great, or it didn't make me feel bad when people said it was shit. It just made me feel bad that I went on there in the first place just to see. And I was like, and eventually as well, I just didn't like reading other people's stuff. That was the main thing, like people arguing on there about really important issues, but having these like arguments where I was like, oh, everyone's coming across bad on this, and it's making me feel like there's no hope for humanity at all. And it's making me feel less positive about human beings than I did before I looked on this app. And actually, if I have conversations with people in real life about these subjects, even if I disagree with them, I tend not to walk away thinking, well, the human race is fucked. We're absolutely fucked. I kind of think, oh, no, okay, you know, I that's a person and not a monster. And so, like, I just, for my own sanity, I was like, I can't be on there for that. But, like, in terms of people saying I was shit, I didn't care anymore. I thought it was funny.
I fell into the trap of, if it was negative, I'd go, oh, God, yeah, you are doing something. And if it was positive, somebody said I really enjoyed that, I just thought, oh, that person's a fucking idiot. That was my kind of reaction to it. But yeah, I mean, you've definitely tempted me to come in off it. It doesn't feel like you've had any negative repercussions.
People make out like if you get off there, that's it. Like all your fans are gone. No one's going to want to see you anymore because they're not aware, because you need social media presence. Bollocks. Absolute bullshit. It's like thinking that if you don't go to a New Year's Eve party, those people aren't your friends anymore. It's nonsense.
Live show experiences. Have you seen much hip-hop live?
I haven't been to enough hip-hop shows, but the ones I've been to... So I went to see Kendrick in Birmingham with Nish, and my favourite thing about that was when we were queuing up, there was a cocktail bar that was like in a hotel across from the venue, trying to lure people in with the slogan, "We've got fun, fizz and good times in our DNA." Really made me laugh. couldn't stop laughing at it. The thought that Kendrick would ever say that he likes fun, fizz and good times really made me laugh. And that show was great. That was like the best show I've seen in an arena. He really used the space, was popping up in different places. It was awesome. Saw Open Mic Eagle in a small venue in Bristol, supported by Milo. I love both of them, and Open Mic Eagle's voice. I just love the tone of his voice. And it was around the time, it was Brick Body Kids, which is like one of my favourite hip-hop albums as well. And seeing him do those songs live was amazing.
Don't call me naked, a rapper. My motherfucking name is Michael Eagle. I'm sovereign, I'm from a line of ghetto superheroes. I holler, I got something to bring to your attention. Attention, 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 attention. I promise you I will never fit in your descriptions. I'm giant, don't let nobody tell you nothing different. They lying, a giant in my body is a building, a building, a building, a building. No services underground.
So De La Soul at Festival in like 2012 or something. And the best thing about that, so there was kind of issues. One of them had mic issues and we couldn't really hear them, but they didn't know that. So what happened was, Trugoy, whose mic was working, was getting really frustrated with the audience because they weren't reacting enough to what he was saying. Because he would say stuff like, "Everybody on this side make some noise," but only the front could really hear him. So everyone else wouldn't make noise. And then Trugoy would be like, "Everyone make some noise." And on this side, it'd be like, "Wah!" like that. And then, so they were like, "This side of the crowd are a bunch of fucking dicks. Like, what is their problem?" And then Trugoy started getting us to be like, "Okay, everyone say fuck you to this side. Everyone say fuck you. You fucking, what are you even here for?" And it's like, think it through, mate. It can't be that statistically everyone on that side is a dickhead. Like, it might be that you're having technical difficulties. And also he started complaining after because he was in a bit of a bad mood. And the things he complained about were hilarious because at one point he went, "Ugh, it's so fucking sunny." And him and a rapper saying sunny was funny. And then he got angry that he said, "All of you are waving your fucking flags." And like people had like banners and stuff. "You're waving your fucking flags. It's so sunny." So like that was like real highlight. Quoted that for a long time.
That sounds like a very out of character De La Soul gig, actually. That's they must have been.
It was like
really
the moodiest. You just wouldn't expect them to be that moody. And the intro was so exciting because they had this whole like 3 feet high and rising intro of people giving testimonies about having heard the album. And you're like, here we go. They're not going to do 3 feet high and rising. This is fucking great. I think they did about two or three songs off that album. They did quite a bit. It was just great. Yeah, fine. I'd love to see a mix of stuff. But that intro was like, it's 3 feet high and rising time. Like, oh my God, I didn't know it was going to be this. And then it was just like them getting angry at us and how sunny it was. Oh yeah, I went to see Death Grips as well.
Out of the shadows, barrage of witch tongue, cobras spit over apocalyptic cult, killer cauldron, smoke, stop music, seriously. Yeah. It goes. Can't stop the groove, looks dark, clear off them locks, relentless rob movement for the knock, meter that G-spot body rock, connect it. Everything you want, everything what we got it, why not come get us to get in that hole and watch me drop this cold guillotine death sentence.
How was that?
Exactly as you imagined it would be. So, equal parts, awe-inspiring and completely infuriating. We got there at like, I don't know, they were the only band, they had no support act. It was unclear on the website what time they were starting. It was at Brixton Academy. And it's full of, like, I would say, and I should have known this, the worst people in the world. Just, like, Death Grips fans are just the most, you know, very annoying, middle-class, posh, like, students who are just getting to grips with irony and love being ironic and doing stuff ironically. And we got there, and at 8:30, the lights went down in the room, and this noise started that kind of went, and everyone just like rushes out of the bar and into the main room and are like, here we go. And that noise went on, and I'm not exaggerating, for 90 minutes. An hour and a half. Bear in mind, they performed for 1 hour when they did eventually take the stage. So the noise, which was essentially their support act, I guess, lasted longer than they did. But everyone crowds in the room, and it's constantly climbing in pitch. So it's just kind of going, but really slowly. And every now and again, probably every 20 minutes, they would change the stage lighting to make you think, now they're going to come on. So everyone's in there. And obviously, because it's Death Grips fans, who like Death Grips fans love the fact that they get trolled by these guys. So they lean into it, 100% lean into it. So they basically keep up the gigs about to start atmosphere for the full 90 minutes. So all of them cheering, clapping. Like at one point they started the Jeremy Corbyn chant to that White Stripes tune. They were doing that for a while. I brought Ed Gamble with me, who I was introducing to Death Grips. So like this is like, I already like them. And I'm like, yeah, of course this is happening. Ed is on the fence about them. And every 10 minutes or every 5 minutes, I guess the time kept getting shorter, he kept turning to me going, I'm just, sorry, mate, I'm going to leave. And I was like, well, I completely...
You're like, wait.
And like, yeah. If you want to go home, I completely get it. Like, of course you would. Like, it's fine. I can go home by myself, but you don't have to stay. And they go, well, give it another 5. And he kept on being like, oh, I want to go so much, but like they keep on. But then when they came on stage, it was amazing. The light show was incredible. They're such incredible musicians and performers. MC Ride is like iconic. I loved Zach Hill before I even properly got into hip hop again. I loved all of his bands. He's one of my favorite drummers. I was into Hello and Marnie Stern and bands like that. So like, I was very excited when I got into hip hop and discovered that he had now had a hip hop, like kind of experimental hip-hop group going. So they were amazing live, but we still left early and it felt great. We left them we watched them for 50 minutes and then we're like, okay, we've had it now. I mean, we left and it felt good because the trolling that they did beforehand, I didn't just want to feel like I was completely like under their, like wrapped around their finger and I'll just stay for the whole goddamn thing. It felt quite good to go home early and be like, yeah, do you know what? Yeah, I'm fine with that. And apparently they only played for another 10 minutes anyway.
Well done for drawing your line in the sand. It's a good move.
Yeah, I felt good. Don't want to get bullied by a band that I like.
But in the end I'm like, eh.
Plug one, plug two, guest plugs for you.
Okay, well, James, listen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, man. You've been an amazing guest.
Best guest,
thank Rupert? You. Is that you just best came guest. Out? I didn't even prompt that. You just came out of, out of nowhere. I
appreciate that, Rupert.
James, what would you like? Is there anything you want to plug or point us to in terms of what you've got coming up?
Yeah, I would love to plug my new podcast, James Acaster's Perfect Sounds, which you did me the honour of being the guest on the very first episode of, and you've done another episode, which is coming out later in the series, Ramesh. I'm looking forward to that mm-hmm. being released as well. Well, I try and convince people that 2016 is the greatest year for music of all time. By sending an album in advance to my guests, then they come on and they talk about it, and I see if they will, if they liked the album, if they'll admit that it is the greatest year for music of all time. And I've got a book that accompanies that called Perfect Sound Whatever as well. And if you read the book and think some of these anecdotes are familiar, yes, I told them on the podcast you've just listened to. Just like let me off the hook.
Okay, well, James, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate you coming on and taking the time out to come on the podcast.
Me too. Thanks for having me.
Enjoy the rest of your lockdown.
See you guys. Bye. You're good people.
Bye bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.